Not too many years ago, most all of us were raised on farms. And from the lessons we learned in being raised up on farms, we went out and built a nation. Then we moved into the city. And that leads us to ask, can city kids learn the lessons farm kids had to learn?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1076th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there along the shores of Manila Bay who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I'm Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Struby on the boards. Jason.
It's my pleasure.
Have you ever had the opportunity to milk a cow?
Oh, man. No, I have not.
No, have not. Well, folks, it's true. A couple generations ago, most all of us were raised on farms. And from the lessons we learned while being raised up on the farms, we developed the character to build a nation and win a world war. But in the winning of that world war, we also learned how to farm with chemicals and machines instead of with people. So most all of us moved into the city. And now we spend a significant amount of our time interacting with binary digits of information. And as we do, we wonder what is happening to our young. We see a quarter of our young adults still living at home with parents. We see them putting off marriage and raising families. We see them waiting for something to happen for them. We wonder how our young can learn the big lessons in life, like working hard, solving problems, getting along with neighbors, eating good food, and worshiping God, while batting around binary digits in the basement. And when it gets right down to it, we wonder, can city kids learn the lessons farm kids had to learn? And if not, will they be able to continue building our nation? And will they be able to fight the next war? Wow. Here to help us explore the lessons learned while being raised up on a farm, we have Lorraine Rominger, who is the author of the Rangity Tango Kids. Lorraine, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you.
So good to have you aboard. Before we get into your story, you have a distinguished career as a story producer for entertainment and television, correct?
Yes, I did work in the entertainment business in New York and Los Angeles for several years. And I also in San Francisco, I had my own video production company. And I worked, I did work in the music business and for an entertainment management company. I've been really fortunate to have some really great jobs and do some really different things than how I grew up.
Well, then, you know, what struck me was the fact that someplace along the line, you figured out you had your own story that needed to be told.
Well, you know, my mother passed away 15 years ago, and she died pretty suddenly. And I was living in New York, and I came back to take care of her. My father and I took care of her. And when, you know, I felt so helpless when she was sick, I couldn't do anything to help her. And after she passed away, I really wanted to, you know, I think as I've gotten older, I've realized how fortunate I was and what a great childhood I had. And I wanted to thank my mom and dad for a wonderful life. And so it kind of gave me a little bit of my power back that I lost when my mom was so sick, because I felt like I was talking to her and thanking her for the way I grew up. So that was what motivated me to write it. And, you know, when you look around at the world today, like you said earlier, the world is so different than it was when I grew up on the farm. And I kind of wanted to save my memories and the things that I did in my childhood and all the traditions that were in my family. And I wanted to put them in writing so I could pass it down to my nieces and my great nieces and great nephews.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about when in reading the Rangity Tango Kids, I was struck by how incredibly similar your upbringing was to mine on my grandparents' farm in Belfry, Montana. Two different farms, you know, thousands of miles apart, and yet is so incredibly even the way you butchered the same. So yes. I was just so curious, you know, all those listeners out there, if they had pretty much the same experiences being raised up on farms, the same kinds of experience, the same kind of. So that's probably something we hope to travel through today, and maybe we'll connect with other people like that. But I was just totally amazed by how similar it was. The Rangity Tango Kids, let me give the audience from your book why you called the book The Rangity Tango Kids. And this is a quote. "We all grew up together, playing and working on the farm. One of the men who worked for Dad for years, Ron Snodgrass, said we ran around the farm like a bunch of orangutans, hanging in the trees and playing in the tree fort, climbing up on the equipment, getting into stuff we shouldn't be messing around with, and causing trouble. So he called us the Rangity Tango Kids."
Right.
It sounded to me like you were having such a great time being Rangity Tango Kids.
Yeah, we were, you know. Living on a farm is kind of like having a playground right outside your door. You know, there was something to do every single day. And when I was like 3 and 4 or 5, I can remember so clearly getting up in the morning and probably more like 5 or 6, getting on our bicycles. Mom would pack us a lunch. We'd put it in our basket and we'd take off. And we'd just ride around the farm and, you know, shoot our BB guns and catch fish in the pond with our hands. And, you know, we'd come home at 5 or 6 in the evening, and Mom never worried about where we were or if something had happened to us. Or, you know, it was just a totally different world. We didn't have bike helmets. We didn't have car seats back then. You know, we drank water out of the ditch and out of the hose and never worried about it. And we picked fruit right off the vine and off the trees and ate it. And, you know, we never locked our doors at night. It was just, you know, it was just different than it is now. And, you know, not right or wrong or good or bad. It was just different. And I, you know, for me, I think that, you know, this country was, you know, this farming is part of the historical fabric of our country, you know, and it's kind of the foundation on which this country was built. So
Michael Olson's first law of the food chain: agriculture is the foundation upon which we build all our sandcastles.
Yeah, you know, it was great. It was just, you know, we water skied in the ditch. There was, you know, being pulled behind the pickup because there was roads on both sides of the mm-hmm. canal that where my dad gets his water from Clear Lake. So there's a pretty big canal. It's probably, I don't know, 30 feet wide and 7 feet deep. So we learned to ski. I remember when the first day we went skiing, Dad said, "Get the skis out of the garage." And I said, "Dad, we don't have a boat." He said, "Just get the skis and come up to the canal." And we got up there, and that's how we all learned to ski. And, you know, we went to school in a one-room schoolhouse that was in the corner of my grandfather's field. It was mm-hmm. the same school.
So where was your farm now?
Our farm is about 4 miles outside of a small agricultural town called Winters mm-hmm. in Yolo County, not too far from Davis.
In California.
California. Mm-hmm.
California is Sacramento Valley.
Yes, Sacramento Valley. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's 5 generations. My family has been farming in Yolo County for 5 generations. And
when you were raised with your siblings and the siblings of your aunts and uncles, correct?
Yes. And we all, my father and his brother, we lived right there on the farm right next to each other, and there was 8 of us. And then my father's 3 sisters, when they got married, they moved into town, and they all had children. But all my cousins would come back during the summer and work on the farm. So, and we, you know, we did a lot of things together as a family. I mean, we had a big birthday party every time it was somebody's birthday. You know, my immediate family, just my dad's siblings and my mother, my mother's sister, you know, there was like 35 of us with all the kids. So we were constantly doing things together as a family. We were very steeped in tradition, from butchering pigs to, you know, the opening day of hunting season. You know, certain times of the year you worked in the fields, harvest, holidays. You know, I just came from a family very steeped in tradition.
And there were eight of you kids in the core kiddom, I guess, of the farm, and there were 5 boys and 3 girls. Now, that must have been interesting.
Well, I was probably the biggest baby of the girls. My sister was pretty tough growing up, let me tell you. But I think that's, I don't know, we were all, I think that's why we're all so competitive, is that we were always trying to outdo each other. It was, you know, it was great. We never left the farm. We didn't go to town. We didn't have play dates with other people. We just stayed on the farm until, you know, we went to high school and went to town and for high school. But when we were little and when we were in grammar school, we just all stayed together on the farm and did everything together.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, but Lorraine, I have to ask you, do you think, like I often think, of those lessons we learned while being raised up on the farm and wonder how our young can learn them while being raised up in the city? Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson with Lorraine Rominger. She's the author of The Raggedy Tango Kids. If you haven't been raised on a farm, I suggest you pick up the book and read it, and then you will be raised on a farm, too. This is the Food Chain. We will be right back after these important messages, and we're going to ask about the lessons our kids learned being raised on farms.
Wow, MetroFarm.com says we can earn a 5-, 6-, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
And we don't even have to own the land. We can lease it year to year.
MetroFarm.com says we can grow fruit on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, vegetables in city greenbelts, and ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
We can even grow flowers on our wooded hillside.
Get all the information you need to grow for profit at MetroFarm.com, including the complete guide to earning 5-, 6-, and 7-figure incomes by farming small parcels of land. Meet the farmers who earn the money. Find experts at MetroFarm.com who will examine your property and assess which crops to grow. Meet consultants who will help steer your project to profitability. And get the latest news about the business of growing high-value specialty crops for the city at MetroFarm.com.
We've always dreamed about farming a small parcel of land. At MetroFarm.com, we can get all the help we need to stop dreaming and start growing.
We're back on the farm with Lorraine Rominger, the author of The Raggedy Tango Kids. Why The Raggedy Tango Kids, you ask? Because the farm laborer looked at the kids running around the farm and said, boy, they're just like a bunch of orangutans running loose, no control at all over them. But there was a lot of control, and it was the control of the family, which takes us to the first important lesson, I think, that we learn being raised on the farm, and that is the importance of family. Lorraine, you lived on a fifth generation of Rominger's on the farm, and your grandparents were still there, correct?
Yes, they were.
What were they? Yeah. What was their job in the overall scheme of things?
Well, you know, my grandpa worked, you know, drove tractor. I mean, I can remember when I was a little girl. He also milked, you know, we had cows and chickens, and they were, the cow barn and the chicken coop were right behind him and Grandma's house. So he milked the cow. That was probably my favorite chore, was going to milk the cow and feed the chickens and hunt the eggs with my grandfather. And he drove tractor. I mean, he worked right alongside my dad and my uncle, and all of his kids worked with him in the fields during harvest.
Did he teach you how to milk cows?
He did, and I wasn't very good at it. It's, you know, it looks easy, but it's not as easy as it looks. And you have to pull a certain way and squeeze a certain way.
There's a rhythm to it.
Yeah, and we had, there was all kinds of cats in the, we had a lot of cats, there was a lot of cats in the barn. And Grandpa used to always say, I never give them any milk, but I'm going to give them just a little bit while you're here. And he'd turn the udder of that cow and aim it right into their mouth. And they never missed a drop.
Uh-huh.
And I knew he was teasing. I remember telling him, Grandpa, you give him milk all the time. And then I remember the morning, the first time I went to hunt the eggs, I had seen the eggs in the grocery store, and they were white. And when Grandpa told me to go into the coop and hunt the eggs, I saw that our eggs were brown. And I can remember telling him that I thought our chickens were sick because their eggs were brown. Anyway, that's another funny story. But he explained to me that different kinds of chickens lay different colored eggs. But anyway.
And you had a mother and father on the farm.
Yes, of course. My mother was a Cody, Shirley Cody, and her and my dad met in high school. My dad was raised in Winters. My mother moved there when she was a freshman in high school. So you know, and they got married right out of college and moved to the farm. And my mother had four kids by the time she was 28. And I don't ever remember us having a housekeeper or a gardener. And the only people that ever babysat us was my aunts or my grandparents.
You know, one of the interesting things your mother said that really struck me, being a city kid, is that there's no one I feel safe leaving you kids with other than your aunts and uncles.
Right.
And, you know, if you think about it, that's really amazing for city people to even comprehend that that could happen anymore.
Yeah, I guess it is. You know, it's just, you know, growing up in the city is just, it's just different. You know, like I said, it's not right or wrong, good or bad. It's just different.
It is different. What about your father? Your father seemed to be always teaching you something, or if not everything.
Right. You know, I was the oldest child, and, you know, he taught me to drive when I was really young. He taught me to fish and taught me to hunt. And, you know, I used to always tell my mom, I think Dad wanted a boy first because he teaches me all these boys things. And she said, well, he's a boy. Those are the things he knows. But, I was the oldest, and my dad did teach me. My dad was a great teacher. So was my mom. My dad could be very strict, but really, at the end of the day, my dad was a softy, and he just knew when to be strong and when to be soft. And my father is still alive. I'm really fortunate, mm-hmm. and still on the farm with my brothers farming.
Else is there to do, right?
Yeah.
And keep farming. You know, the photograph that struck both myself and my wife, Marlene, was the photograph of you on a horse with your father.
Oh, yeah, that was my grandfather's horse, Prince.
The reason it struck us is because we have a photo just like that of myself with my daughter on a horse, and when she was very, very young. And I think the moment, you know, we set her up on that horse with me, she became a horse girl. Is that what happened to you?
Yes. Yeah, my dad bought me my first horse when I was 10. And then she had a colt. And then the priest in Winters had a horse. And so I ended up with three horses. I think I rode my horse every day from the time I got her until I sold her when I got out of high school. So... Mm-hmm. To go to college, you know, you got to ride a horse every day and take care of him.
That's one of the things that your father was pretty good at, was enforcing that sense of discipline. You want a horse, you have to keep a horse, which means you have to shovel that. What did you shovel?
Manure. Yeah,
of course. Stuff you can't say on the radio, right?
Yeah, had to clean out the. You know, we had to clean out the barn every other day because horses can't stand the manure. It's, you know, not good for their hoof. And you know, you have to ride it every day. You have to feed it every morning and feed it every night. It's a big responsibility. If I buy you this horse, you have to do certain things. So, yeah, I mean, for me, growing up on the farm was about, you know, working right alongside of my family so the family and the farm would prosper. And it was a lot about responsibility and hard work and discipline. You know, you had things you had to do every single day, whether you wanted to or not. You had to milk the cow every morning and every night, and you had to feed the chickens and hunt the eggs, and you had to harvest at a certain time. And you know, I used to rake hay, and you had to rake hay in the middle of the night when it was mildewed and when the hay was soft so the leaves wouldn't fall off of it. So I used to go out in the fields at, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning and work until sunup. There's just certain times of the years you have to do certain things, and I think that taught me responsibility and discipline and hard work. And I saved every penny I ever made. And when I was 16, I walked into the Ford dealership and bought a Mustang and wrote a check for it and paid for it with my own money.
And that was a pretty big deal because your father gave you your first paying job, right?
Yeah, picking up walnuts. Mm-hmm. I remember back then you picked up walnuts, you got a dollar a sack. Yeah, we had a lot of walnut trees on the farm, and I used to run out to the shop every morning with my plastic bucket mm-hmm. and pick up walnuts. I thought I was rich, making a dollar a sack.
And you were. You know, in in considering your story and the story of all the rest of us who were raised on farms and realizing the importance of family, and you look at what happened to us when we moved into town, and we see that fully one-third of America's children are now being raised without fathers. And I look at all of the precious gifts your father gave you and mine, me, and wonder what these children will be able to do without those, the gifts of those lessons of discipline and everything else. Is there a place where they can learn those things in the city?
Well, you know, I think if you weren't fortunate to grow up with a biological parent that, I think as you grow up, other people in your life teach you, whether it's your teacher or your coach or, you know, the preacher, the friends that you make, you know, the doctor in your school. I mean, I think that those people become your family, and those are the people that teach you lessons as you grow up. You know, I was fortunate. I had a mother and father in the house with me the whole time growing up, and I know there are kids that don't, and but, you know, hopefully the people that come into their life, you know, become their family and their teachers.
Hopefully that will happen. So when we come back, I'd like to talk about another lesson that is learned when growing up on a farm, and that is the fact that everything on the farm has a purpose and a place and a reason for being. And there are all kinds of things, ways of looking at that, and one of them will be the hogs. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson with Lorraine Rominger. She the author of the Rangity Tango kits. Just think of it. They're called Rangity Tangos because they look like a bunch of orangutans running around the farm, climbing on everything, having more fun than anybody should be allowed to have in the modern world. And they did it all as a way of earning a living. And that was through farming, the foundation upon which we build all our sandcastles. Right back. Well, folks, we are back on the farm with Lorraine Rominger. She's the author of the Rangity Tango Kids. And, of course, we're with you as well. If you have any great experiences, great lessons that you learned while growing up on a farm, love to hear about them. Pick up your phone, dial us, 831-479-1080, 831-479-1080, and tell us your stories, your lessons, the lessons that you learned while growing up on a farm. Lorraine, one of the fascinating things, of course, of growing up on a farm is that you learn all about life and death very early.
Yes, you do. My dad used to always say everything, and, you know, life has a purpose. I remember the first time I went hunting with him. I only went hunting with him and saw him shoot a deer once, and I never went with him again. But, you know,
no more shooting Bambis for Lorraine.
No, I could. I, you know, don't get me wrong. I love to shoot at targets and clay pigeons, but I don't like to kill things anymore. And but whatever my dad shot, unless it was a varmint that was eating his crops, we ate. You know, and I grew up thinking venison was beef my whole life because my mother never told me it was venison because she knew how upset I was when my dad shot that deer. So anyway, but yeah, everything in life does have a purpose. My dad used to say that, and we butchered the pigs too.
Well, you know, that's one thing, of course, being raised in a city, is that you really never experience that life and death. All of dying is, you know, so bundled up and tucked away and hidden in factories far, far away. And, you know, kids raised in cities don't get to experience the fact that living and dying, and that, you know, people feed plants and animals and plants feed people. And, we kind of forget that because everything comes in packages. So I'd like you, if you're so willing, to take us through your first experience, what you remember about learning how to butcher pigs.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we did it every year right before Christmas, so we'd have fresh sausage for Christmas. And we used to buy 9 pigs because there were 9 families that came to Grandma and Grandpa's house, and it took 2 days.
So it was kind of a cooperative effort. You raised 9 pigs for 9 different families?
Yes. Well, we didn't raise the pigs from the time they were little. my dad would buy them, and we would, you know, have them for, I don't remember how long that he fed them and raised them, but it's not like we raised pigs. We would buy pigs, really just the butcher, for the meat for the year to have to eat. And the first day was the worst, because that was the day they killed the pigs, and I only watched that one time, and I never went out to the barn again. And
but you had to sneak a peek, didn't you?
I did have
to. You weren't allowed to watch, and you watched anyway.
Yeah, I wanted to know, I wanted to see what it was like, because my dad had told me so many times what they did. And looking through a hole in the barn one time was all I needed. So, but then, and then they, you know, then once the pig is dead and gutted, then they put it in this big vat of boiling water to take, to get all the skin, all the hair off. And then they, you know, take off its feet and its head, and they hang it upside down on this big rack and let it, you know, stay there all night long. And then the next day is the day that we would cut up the pigs and, you know, pork chops and pork roast and make the sausage and wrapped it up in paper and wrote on it what it was, just like in the butcher shop. And, you know, the women kind of stayed in the house the first day and made breakfast and made lunch for the men. And then the second day, the women went out and helped wrap the meat, and men cut it up, and we made sausage, and we had the meat for a year, and we did it every year like clockwork.
You know, I can remember very well the whole process. I must have been that my grandfather allowed the boys to watch, because I certainly remember the whole process myself as well. And it just sounded exactly like the way you described it in the Rangity Tango kits, just exactly.
Right.
And in that, you had to come to grips with the fact that you weren't going to eat pigs anymore.
Well, I you know, I told my mother I was never eating pig again, but I do eat pork now, so I can't say that I've never eaten a pig. I've never eaten pork since then. But, you know, at the time when you're little, of course you say that.
Sure.
I remember when my mother told me it was venison. I think I was, I don't know, 12 or 13, and I said, "This is the best beef steak you've ever made, Mom." And she looked at me and said, "That's not beef, that's venison." And I said, "Oh, my God, I'm never eating venison again." But, you know, that didn't last long.
Sure. And but that's all in the process then, really, of learning, you know, about the fact that we live and die for each other. And
yeah.
And on a farm, it seems like everything had a purpose and a place. Can you think of anything that didn't have a purpose and a place on a farm? You know, for example, the cats. The cats had a very important purpose on the farm.
Yeah, my dad and my grandpa used to say we can't have enough cats. They kill the mice and the rats and the gophers, and we need those cats. So, you know, we had dogs. I mean, as far as a dog that, you know, what does a dog have to do with the farm or farming? I mean, the dog doesn't work on the farm. The dog was, you know, but that's part of your family. It's, you know, mm-hmm. you have animals. You learn how to take care of an animal and what it means to, you know, that's a responsibility that you have. But,
and I also remember our dogs had a lot to do with working the cattle and the critters around, too.
That's probably true. We didn't have dogs that, you know, we didn't have sheep and we didn't have cows. I mean, we had a cow and we also butchered sheep. We had about 100 chickens in the coop, but we didn't have other animals that needed, you know, herding.
So. Now, did you butcher the chickens as well?
Yes, we did. And that was not nearly as difficult of a process, but the first time I saw my dad, you know, lay the chicken down on the stump and cut off his head with an axe, that was the end of that for me.
That was the end of that for you. Good enough.
Yeah,
so
I can remember my dad saying, "Come here, I'll show you how to get the feathers off of it." And I said, "Dad, I hunt the eggs and feed the chickens, and I'm not going to help you kill them."
So that would be the boy's job, I guess. They got foisted onto them, right?
Yeah, well, my job.
Okay. You know, in thinking about the interrelatedness of how everything worked together on the farm, and, you know, all of that was so much teamwork. Did that help you, do you think, in your career as a producer later on?
I mean, I don't know if it helped me in my, I mean, I think that the lessons that I learned on the farm and it helped me in pretty much all the jobs that I had. You know, trusting other people, you know, being part of a team or having your own responsibility, knowing that you had to get things done on time. You know, we were pretty young and we had big responsibilities. You know, we drove the tractors, we cultivated, we drove harvesters, we drove trucks, we, you know, took the grain to the warehouse in Sacramento. I mean, we had a lot of, you know, adult responsibilities when we were really young. And so, yes, I think that those things that I learned, being, you know, accountable and responsible, have helped me pretty much in, you know, in all of my jobs.
You know, my grandfather put me on the tractor for the first time when I was six. And he put it in gear and he said, "I'll meet you at the other end of the field."
That sounds like something my dad would do.
And I was so scared, I peed my pants. But I made it to the other end of the field, and he was there. And
that's pretty cool.
You know, it was a pretty cool experience.
Yeah.
Folks, looking for your cool experiences on the farm, 831-479-1080, 831-479-1080. Michael Olson, your host for this hour with Lorraine Rahmer. You're the author of The Rangity Tango Kids. Imagine it, a bunch of kids running around like orangutans, having the time of their lives farming. Right back. Back on the farm with Lorraine Rahmer, the author of The Rangity Tango Kids. Gosh, great picture on the cover of this book. A bunch of dirty kids. Looks like you've been playing touch football in the mud.
Yes. That was the annual Rominger Mud Bowl, the day after Christmas every year. And if it hadn't rained and the field wasn't muddy, the boys got the water trucks and went out and watered the field until it was muddy. And so, yes, it was tackle football, no whining, no babies. And I don't think there was a game that went by that somebody didn't get hurt. But like I said, we were a competitive bunch and we all liked to win. So,
did not seem to be much protection growing up on the farm, did there? I mean, you know, we city folks with our kids, we can't let them outside. We can't let them play in the dirt. We can't let them drive until they're 18 and
I know
had lessons, and we can't let them do
world, Michael, than it was back then when I grew up in the 1950s and 1960s. It's just different, you know, and I have to tell you, I prefer the world that I grew up in, not the world I'm growing old in. I can tell you that.
I guess we're all probably like that. You know, got Heather Ann Faye tuned in via Facebook with the following comment with respect to lessons learned on the farm. She says, consequences. If you leave the gate open, the cows will get on the road. If you don't give the pig extra water on a hot day, it'll die. Drop the basket of eggs, no breakfast. There always seems to be direct consequences for not doing your job.
Right. Yeah, that was, I remember when my dad taught me how to start siphons and to irrigate. I was kind of fascinated by irrigation. And I told my dad that I wanted to learn how to irrigate. And so he was teaching me how to start siphons, and he could start one in a few seconds. And I had water all over me. And then he started explaining to me about, you know, the water and how you have to get it down the furrow at a certain amount of time, and the water can't sit, and the crops can't get too wet because then the roots don't get any oxygen, and then the plant will die. And finally I looked at Dad and I said, you know what, Dad, I don't want to irrigate. I don't want to be responsible for killing your tomato plants.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, there was always a consequence. You know, if you drove the tractor out of the field full of tomatoes and turned it, you know, turned it too tightly and got stuck in the dirt where the ditch had been, where they had just filled it in so they could harvest, you could tip over the trailer. I saw that happen. I mean, there was, you know, and lose all the tomatoes. There's a consequence. And, you know, farming is, you know, there are so many things about farming, as we all know, that the farmer really just has absolutely no control over, you know, which the weather and, you know, bug infestations or, you know, you can ruin a crop in a few days. So,
well, that takes me, you know, to one of the other big lessons that I learned, and I see that you learned in it, in working farms, faith in God seems to be prevalent. I mean,
yes.
And it's because you know, there are so many things we have no control over.
Right. Well, I grew, you know, I grew up in a very religious family, and we went to church every Sunday. I still go to church every Sunday. I appreciate that I grew up with that kind of belief in God. And I do think that it's part of, you know, the thread of, you know, part of our American history. You know, when families in the 1850s and, you know, if you look at statistics, it's really kind of scary that, you know, in the 1850s, half of the people that lived in the United States were employed by agriculture. And today it's about 2%. So, you know, it's, it says a lot about what's happening to, you know, small farmers. It's just really difficult to make a living unless you have more acres than you used to have in those days. You can't make a living off of.
But it's not just, you know, farmers. It's those of us who have moved into cities. And we see that, you know, one-third of our children are now being raised without fathers. And if you think about the lessons your father gave you,
right,
and the significance of that in your life and how important that those lessons are, and right, and then where are the kids going to get those lessons? You see, it's not just farming that is harmed by the industrialization. It's society at large.
Well, right. I agree. Yeah.
And you look at our cities, and they seem to be in a state of disintegration. All of those things that used to hold us together, those lessons that we learned on the farm,
I think the family unit as a whole has disintegrated quite a lot over the last century, you know, the last few generations. I mean, really, you know, families just don't. I mean, we sat down to dinner at our kitchen table every single night.
Yeah.
I cannot remember a night that we did not sit down as a family and have dinner together.
With and no TV, right?
No TV. There were no cell phones then. You know, and now when we have parties at my father's house and all his grandkids come, if they pull out the phone at the table, oh, he takes it away from them. So, you know, it's kind of about respect. And, you know, doing things as a family. I think it's really important that you do things with your kids as a family.
Okay, and when we come back, I'm going to ask Lorraine where we go from here. She's mixing with some very important people up there in San Francisco, Robert Redford, Peter Coyote, and they're saying some very nice things about her writings. So I would like to ask her what the reaction, you know, to the big city folks is to her writing about her time on the farm with the Rangity Tango kids. This is the Food Chain, Michael Olson with Lorraine Rominger and you. We will be right back after these messages. Where do we go from here with the lessons we've learned on the farm? Well, we are back on the farm, but not very long. We're soon headed back to the city. Lorraine in San Francisco, California, and myself on the Monterey Bay Area here. But we're still surrounded by agriculture, and it's still very much a part of our existence. Without it, of course, everything falls apart. Lorraine, your farm is still in the family?
Still in the family, and my brother's farm. They grow mainly organic and conventional tomatoes.
Mm-hmm. Are there kids on the farm?
No, all of us kids are grown up and gone.
Mm-hmm. Do your brothers have kids on the farm?
My brothers have children, but they are in college. Mm-hmm. There's only one child left on the farm, my brother's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And she's still in grammar school.
There you go.
But you know, I am as lucky as I have been to do a lot of different things in my life. What's, I think, for me, my life has kind of come full circle because I'm moving back to the farm. I bought last year my mother's parents' house in Winters, the house they built in 1948 that my mother grew up in and I grew up in with them when they took care of me. And one of my mother's best friends bought it from them about 50 years ago. And her they sold the house, and I went to look at it. I knew I wanted to buy it because it was, you know, my grandparents' house. But I walked into the garage, and on the wall, on the redwood siding in the garage, was when I was 6 years old, I wrote Lorraine Rominger, 6 years old, first grade, Union School, in purple crayon. And when I went to buy the house and went out and looked in the garage wall, that purple crayon writing is still there, just as clear as the day I wrote it. And I just stood there and knew that this was where I was going to be for the last chapter of my life. So I'm probably in a year or two going to be back living in Winters and a few miles from the farm.
And your father's still there? And
yes,
you can still go out and visit Papa and jump in the pickup with him and ride around the farm with a dog in the back.
That's what we do every weekend. Yeah, as soon as I get off this show with you, I'm going to get in my car and drive to the farm. I pretty much go, you know, for me, it's about spending time with my father. He's 86 years mm-hmm. old. So it's about, you know, I really want to spend as much time with him as I can. And I still have a lot of friends in Winters, which is such a great community. It's a small agricultural community. It's not as small as it was when I was in high school. When I was in high school, I think there were about 1,500 people there, and now there's about 7,000. So it's changed, but it still has that small, unique kind of country charm to it. I'm really looking forward to going back home.
So what's the big lesson for you, Lorraine? You put a lot of time and effort into writing the Rangity Tango Kids. You thought about it a lot of times. And of course, what is your takeaway here? What is your big lesson?
That, you know, your life is really about your family and your friends and the community, that, you know, taking care of one another, being a part of, for me, something larger than myself, which is a community and a family. And, you know, how important that is and how that really helped me develop the foundation on which I built my life. And I just kind of want to go back to my roots.
And amen to that. Lorraine Rominger, the author of The Rangity Tango Kids. Pick up a copy, read it, and it'll be just like you were raised on a farm. And folks, remember Michael Olson. We'll file this one under Michael Olson's first law of the food chain, which of course is agriculture is the foundation upon which we build all our sandcastles. Lorraine, thank you so much.
Oh, Michael, thank you for having me. I really, really appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
What a pleasure.
Listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen.